Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
It's so good to be back. Yes, we are.
Are we back?
Yeah, we are back.
Right now?
Today we are back. This moment we are back. That's right, Tuesday, March 25th, 2014, 2014, for some of you. We are the Movies Hate You Show.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You Show.
Yes.
Why didn't Todd do any of that?
We'll overdub him later.
Yeah. Todd, can you edit yourself in doing the...
Fix it in the mix.
I can do that.
Todd, are you with us? Are you playing guitar?
I'm right here.
All right, good. Hey, welcome to the Movies Hate You Show, sponsored by and created and produced and directed by Wild Eye Releasing.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You Show, sponsored by
and produced and edited and directed by Wild Eye Releasing. I like that. You know, that's good. You get the plug in there.
Extended version.
Yes. And to my left is the venerable... Asian manservant.
The accidental occidental.
Of the house. The accidental occidental. Mr. Ree, Lee Peterson, welcome back to the show after a pretty long pre-spring hiatus.
Yes. Yes. Wow, we've been gone like almost the entire winter.
Pretty much. I mean, I think we were hibernating.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we'll call it. And on the boards tonight, Todd Sheets.
Hello.
The director, producer extraordinaire.
Yay. Yeah.
The man behind his new film, Spirits, coming to a theater near you. A
lot of buzz about that.
Yeah, a lot of buzz on the Facebook about Spirits. And here it's up for some festivals, too. So we're very proud to hear that, Todd.
Thank you.
And of course, we'd love to look at it for distribution possibilities. But don't feel, just because we're the number one rated show on Jackalope, that, you know, you have to go with us.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Free will.
Now, Todd, there's still that missing show in the archives. There's one show missing. It's the one where I had my meltdown about the relays at the Jackalope station. Is that ever going to go up? Because I have fans asking. Everyone heard I had a meltdown on the air.
It will go up.
And they want to hear through my meltdown.
The meltdown will go.
You know, the customers like when we go gonzo. They just like when you lose your credit. They hate scripted stuff. You know, we're from the world of indie films, so everything's on the cuff, on the cheap. Nudity sometimes.
Sometimes. I'm nude right now.
Mr. Ree's nude right now. So we do this from time to time. So they like to hear unscripted stuff. So when I go bananas, they want to hear it.
I think we both kind of went off that night, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I'm saying. And Mr. Ree never gets mad. He's one of the most even-tempered people I've ever met in my life. And he even got angry and started yelling at me or somebody. But Todd, I understand if you don't want to air it.
Oh, no, it'll go up, sir.
Todd's not very friendly tonight either. You came in a bad mood. He's in a bad mood. What's going on here? I think we need a guest tonight.
We do. But hey, before we bring him on first, we're going to do a little recap.
Oh, I told him we're going to do a little recap, a little. No, he'll come in. He'll come in soon.
Soon, pretty soon. Yeah.
As soon as I give Todd the push the red button right here. See, if I push this red button, Todd will bring him in.
Red button.
Push red button. Hey, let me tell you what's going on at the...
Nero.
Let me tell you what's going on at our sponsor. Let me tell you, and you know what's going to be great, Mr. Ree? This is a very special episode because our special, super special, excellent guest is direct from China. Dead serious. In China right now via Skype. In China waiting for us, like 7 a.m. right now in China.
Is it Red China? Do we still say Red China?
Well, you can ask him.
Red China.
You can ask him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can ask him. But unlike you, he's not Asian. He is an Occidental in China. Living and working.
Uh-huh. So accident. So he's the accidental accident.
Well, he's not accidental. He went there on purpose.
Oh.
Anyway, we're going to bring him up. But what did you want to do? You want to do a little recap of the last 3 weeks? We haven't been on the air. Again, we are live tonight. No phone calls tonight. Very special guest. Tuesday, March 25th, 2014. For those of you keeping a record of the archives.
Wow.
Sounds like the Dave Emery show. You ever hear Dave Emery? Or no. Those, today? You never heard? It's like a conspiratorial kind of. He just reads into the mic for like an hour. All this, like, it's all like Bilderberg stuff and everything. You never heard Dave Emery?
Never heard Ralph Emery, I know, from
Grand Ole Opry. I don't know. I don't think they're related.
No.
You should look him up. But let me tell you what's going on with our sponsor. Now, who's our sponsor of the show?
Our sponsor is Wild Eye Releasing. Is that correct?
Hoffman Beverages. Yes.
Losses by Strikes.
Yes. Yeah. Martin Wild Eye Releasing. Now, what's going on with Wild Eye Releasing? I'm glad you asked.
Yes. We'll just put that in later.
We have one of Todd's friends, Doug Bradley. We have a film with Doug Bradley in it.
Uh-huh. Doug Bradley.
He doesn't star in the whole movie, let's be honest.
Pinhead from the Hellraiser.
Yes. He makes a great appearance in this movie called Scream Park, which has been, Ain't It Cool News just gave it a fantastic review. If you get it, you get it. It is yet another in the slasher throwbacks, but it's done by the book. It's not. It doesn't have the... You know, the problem with some of these modern slasher retro homages that I have is that there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek. They're winking at you. This is just done straight. I mean, it could have been up against a Mutilator on a shelf somewhere in 87, you know, and you would see this film. So that's what I really like about it. You know, it's not a million-dollar movie, but it's million-dollar heart.
It could make a million-dollar movie. It could make $1 million.
Yeah. I'll take a quarter of that. A third, you know, anything, yes.
Well, hey.
So anyway, Scream Park is going. Let's just plug our stuff for keep it moving. Scream Park will be available April 22nd.
Oh.
April 22nd. A month from today, it will be available all over the place.
Springtime movie. Right?
It's going to be in Walmart nationwide.
Wow.
Not only that, it's going to be in Best Buy nationwide. That's how good this film is. We got it into a small little turtle like us. Got this film into all these big outlets.
Congratulations. What do you think was the factor that did that?
Well, it's a number of things. It's, you know, horror is always a good bet, but having a name. There's two names in it. You know, Ogre from Skinny Puppy's in it as well. Hmm. You know him from Repo, the Genetic Opera. Uh-huh. And, of course, Skinny Puppy. I mean, these are horror names. These are horror brands that are involved with this film, and that's always going to help your film. If you're an indie filmmaker out there, spend the extra couple $1,000 and get somebody in your film. And I don't mean film them saying hello and then put that in the film. Get a scene or two with somebody. Go to all these conventions. Put up the money. If you made a $5,000 movie, spend $7,000 and get a name in it because it can sell. Mm. And this is proof of it. You know, that's what it comes down to. Hollywood trades on names and money. That's it. They don't care about anything else. They don't care how good you are. Oh, you're up and coming talent. Oh, you're brilliant. They don't care. Who's in it? First question everybody asked me for years. First question.
And Doug Bradley will sell a movie to
Doug Bradley
to
will sell a movie. Absolutely. And so will Tony Todd. So will an Eric Roberts. Mm-hmm. You know, so will Kane Hodder. These are names, you know, you want to get comparable names. You know, you can't get just anybody, you know, because you think they're cool. You got to look at what's out there. Look at what's in Redbox. Look at what's in these retailers. Look at what's selling and you know, get somebody that you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might hurt a little bit, but it's going to help you in the long run. It's better to have that chance to sell it than to have no chance at all.
Right, and so without giving away any trade secrets, what would that cost an aspiring filmmaker to do?
Depends
to get a Doug Bradley for a couple of days. Not to give his price specifically, but...
Yeah, I mean, look, it can cost you anywhere from, you know, for a day, it might cost you $2,000-$3,000 for a day for one of these guys. I'm not saying that's Doug Bradley, but I'm saying, you know, that it's not going to be cheap. It's not going to be $100, you know. But you can have, you know, competent actors in the film who are not names, and then put... You know, throw somebody in there like a Tony Todd. And look, you see this done all the time.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, you might feel it's a little bit of a sellout or you're hurting the integrity, but I don't think so. Because, you know, everybody leaves the show part of the, you know, the business part of the show business out. But that's the business end of it. You have to give the market something it wants that it feels it can sell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want all these people to sell your movie. Well, you have to show them that you have something in the film that has sold before in the past. So that's what you have to do. you can't, as a first time or a very low budget filmmaker, you can't trade on like everyone's going to see how brilliant I am. These decisions are made in mere seconds, and if you don't have the name will grab them. The name will get their attention, and I'll say, oh, I've heard of Eric Roberts. Oh yeah, of course. You know, he was in Batman. You know, like whatever. Like these are names that constantly generate money for people, even if it's not a lot. It adds credibility, mm-hmm. and it'll sell overseas too if it has a name that has international appeal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Todd, you agree with that, right? I mean, you've got a couple of big names in your
House of Forbidden Secrets. Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's helping to sell it, right? I mean, that's
that gets people's butts in the seats. That's what's important.
Yeah.
You say Lou Temple from The Walking Dead, House of Forbidden Secrets. People want to see it just for him. They just mm-hmm. want to see him do something because they kind of feel feel like they want more of him. You know, you say XYZ from Devil's Rejects, blah blah blah. Sid Haig, all these people, who want to work. You know, if you're doing a Kickstarter, you're budgeting your film, budget in for a name, even if it's an appearance. And again, I'm not talking about stealing a shot while the guy's in the bathroom at the convention. Set up a shot with lighting. Treat them like a professional actor. Put them in the film. Give them some good dialogue to read. Do something to enhance what you're trying to sell to people. Mm.
So not the David the Rock Nelson.
I know that stuff's cool. You know, there are certain people to stay away from. I mean, look, there's a lot of quote unquote celebrities or screen queens, but it's got to be somebody with a name that has sold stuff, and not in 1980 stuff that's selling today. You've got to look at look. You're not going to get into the car business without seeing what kind of cars people are making and what's selling. It's the same thing. It's just look at it as an end product and what are people buying.
I just meant the approach that David Rock Nelson takes.
Oh, no.
He will go to a convention or something and he'll videotape someone sitting at their table selling their photos.
And then put them in the movie.
And they're in the, suddenly, and now they're in the movie.
Did you hear that famous thing he did with Hillary Clinton. She came to town to do a speech, and he was out in the audience, in the crowd, filming her, and then he put Hillary Clinton.
But the best thing
movie.
Is, and then he's holding the holding the camera, and with his free hand, I guess he takes his. If the movie is the giant ant,
the devil
whatever,
ant,
the frog, or he puts that into the frame, so it looks like it's
to kill Hillary. Yeah, it's brilliant. That's its own kind of brilliance. Mm-hmm. That's its own kind of brilliance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, don't not make those kind of movies too. I mean, if that's your thing, but if you're looking at it as a commerce situation, I got into this business to make money, or at least make enough to make another film and not constantly get, burned or turned down. Most of the time these filmmakers who say, I got burned by the studio, I don't know. I question it because these things are hard to sell mm-hmm. without names, without production value. You're up against Anchor Bay, Image, Lionsgate, all these companies making horror films for anywhere from $500,000 to $2.5 million. That's what you're up against. You made a $10,000 movie. What do you think your chances are? Yeah, you're coming a toothpick versus a sword. So you have to, cheat. Get somebody in there. Put a cover that looks like their cover. You know what I mean? You have to do those things.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm available for advice anytime filmmakers want to email us.
You just give out free
just
advice.
Just go to the Wild Eye Releasing website, wildeyereleasing.com, hit the contact, and shoot me your questions. I have it done all the time. Filmmakers say, I'm making a movie. What should I do? I'll tell you straight up. It doesn't cost you a dime. There you go.
Make your own damn movie. Distribute your own damn movie. So I don't know how much time we have before.
Not much time. We
could be real quick. Just hit The Walking Dead because next week is the end of the season. Any predictions about what's happening? I think I know.
Well, I mean, it's obvious. I don't know. I think the projection those people are clearly cannibals at this terminus. I think.
Well, maybe not. There's a group in the comics called the Hunters.
Okay.
That are cannibals.
Okay.
And so. People are speculating that's going to be the reveal. It might not be. They might just be I think you're right. I think they are. I think that's going to be it.
It's something weird about it. It was so easy to just walk in there. They were clearly being watched. And
she's barbecuing.
And she's barbecuing mm-hmm. probably Daryl's.
Tyrese. That's my bet. Really? And I got to stress, I don't know anything. It's just a total guess.
Why would it be Tyrese?
I think Tyrese is going.
But why would she be Tyrese would have made it there already? How far behind were they?
My guess.
See, I think it's the girl, whoever got, what's her name, who got Beth, who got mm-hmm. stolen in the car from Daryl.
She's a skinny little thing. Why would they cook her, though?
Meat is meat, man.
Meat is meat, but when you got Tyrese and you got Beth, who are you going to eat?
Well, if Tyrese is dead, then it's implied that
Well, here's the deal.
What's her name is dead.
In the comics, the deal with the hunters is they don't kill them. What they do is they, I think one of them is a surgeon or was a surgeon in mm-hmm. real life. So they basically cut parts off of them, suture them up.
Oh.
So they don't, because if you kill them, then they're dead because they become, they're zombies. You got to throw them out.
Oh, right.
If you cut off a foot, you can eat that foot.
Well, why not just,
tomorrow,
why
you can
not
eat
just,
the next foot.
Why not just, you know, slam them in the head and then, you know, break their head open, you know, break their head open, they're dead, and chop them up then. Well, why would you have to keep
well,
them?
Well, then the meat won't, you know, how long is the meat going to keep?
Refrigeration. Right?
There's no refrigeration in the post-apocalypse.
There's rivers. Don't they have rivers?
I don't know.
Do they have rivers? Where do you put your milk when you're a Boy Scout?
Where do they put the formula for the baby? That's a good question. I mean, if you've ever
ice.
Had children, you realize it's a little more complicated than they're making it out to be.
Dry
to
ice,
baby,
man.
You know?
It's dry ice.
I did learn a new term, though.
Yeah?
Foiler. You know what a foiler is?
It's like a spoiler.
It's a fake spoiler.
A fake spoiler.
It's a fake spoiler. I'm on the Walking Dead forums, which is great. There's lots of information. Only one part of it is spoilers, but you know you have to go into the spoiler room to find the spoilers. But there's you know people with their predictions and whatnot, and screen grabs, and some people have compiled an entire summary of the last episode just based on the screen grabs from the promo. All right.
Okay.
Which is cool, but somebody put in a summary it was yesterday actually. And I read it and I was like, I don't know. There's a couple things missing from this. Could be it, but there's a couple things they didn't address. And I'm calling BS on it. Turns out it was a foiler.
A
foiler. That's where I learned the term. A foiler.
It's like a family.
Alert. Like a what?
Framley.
What's a Framley?
A friends and family plan from Sprint.
Oh.
I get paid to say that. Sorry.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, the promo they did for... the final episode was it gave away nothing.
Well, there's
close-ups of Rick,
right? But apparently there's a New Zealand promo,
which is
totally different.
Okay,
which I don't think it gives away less of, but it's got there's stuff in there
there's something with these guys that are with Daryl. I don't know. They're looking for Terminus. Everybody's looking for Terminus. There, and it's just something was too weird about Terminus and creepy and.
Too easy to get into.
Too easy to get into, and this woman was creepy. Who is she cooking up? I think it's the girl.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know. Or you knew
we don't
something.
Know. We don't know, yeah. I mean, we may not even know, all the answers.
Cliffhanger.
Are
it's going to be a cliffhanger. Of course. It's going to be a cliffhanger. They want you to tune in October.
Yeah, it could be that the last thing we see is Rick opening up a
that's what I think it's going to be. They're all going to drop their guard and everybody's going to be hanging out and everything's great, and then somebody's going to discover the reveal at the end, and it's going to be like oh my god moment, and there's heads in a locker or something, you know. It's going to be one of those kind of things, but they're already going to be their guns have been taken away or something, because look, the hunters get there. I mean, they're looking to kill Rick.
Right. I've got a feeling the hunters get there after Rick gets there. Rick and his men. Okay. Well, we know that Glenn and Maggie and those guys are there. Glenn, Maggie, Abraham, Rosita, and Eugene. They're there. We don't know anything about anybody else, right?
Right.
Nobody else is there. So my guess is that Rick, Michonne, and Carl show up next. Have their little confrontation with Mary is the woman. No, did you recognize her, by the way? Denise Crosby?
Oh, was it Denise Crosby? Yeah. I thought at first it was, what's her name with those blue eyes? Remember? She was in the 80s.
From They Live?
Yeah. I thought it was her at first.
Meg Foster.
I thought it was Meg Foster at first.
No, it's Denise Crosby. So now she's locked into the convention scene for the rest of her life, right? Between Star Trek and this.
She's going to get $30 a clip for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. How do you like that?
Good for her.
Yeah, hey, listen.
Good for her.
You know, however you can make it. How you doing, Todd?
I'm rocking.
Cool, man.
Right. Todd, what do you think? You think everybody's going to die?
Everybody's going to die. Eventually.
Nobody died last week.
It's weird.
Yeah, I thought that was the Glenn in the cave thing. I was like, God, with that. Yeah, those zombies would have been all over them. Yeah. They were making so much noise. I was like, this is, you know, it's a little silly. And then the whole explanation, well, I just shot up in the air and was like, all right, I'm just going to go with it, man.
Well, we're going to lose somebody in the finale.
It's more because... it's more of a comic book than the comic books are. You know what I mean? Where comic books, you really suspend your disbelief when you're reading a comic book. But when you're watching this show, it's like it's beyond a comic book. It's like you have to live within a panel of what's happening. You can't think about, gee, why did those zombies come out of the bushes after their conversation when they were talking loud for 10 minutes? You know, like, I don't know. It's a, you know, whatever, man. I'm on board. That's cool. Until somebody does a better zombie. Until Vince Gilligan does a zombie movie, show.
Gilligan would be good.
Could happen.
What's that?
Yeah. Gilligan would be good.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, he's going to do, you know, he's going to do, his next thing's going to be, who knows?
Better Call Saul. Isn't he doing that?
I think, yeah, he's involved in that. But I mean, his next non-Breaking Bad thing will be interesting to see. But it might be some kind of, you know, war-torn child in Yugoslavia or something you don't want to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I say we're going to lose Tyrese. We're going to lose another big, possibly Glenn or Maggie.
Really?
I don't know.
Somebody else predicted that. Somebody else said they're going to bring them together and then they're going to kill one. Yeah. Was that you?
I don't know.
Because somebody said that recently. So I think we need to bring our guests now. Let me set up our guests. Now, there is out there in the ether, there's a call. Did you call for sneeze?
No, I was getting my ether.
Okay, good. In the ether, there's a wild eye pet project out there you may or may not have seen. And it's called Dragon City, Punk Rock in China. Huh. Okay. And it's really awesome project that we've done. In fact, 42nd Street Pete was involved, and you know the person we're bringing in now, direct from China, Daryl Pestilence is the brainchild of this and the director of this. He's a music video director, heavily involved in the punk scene in China. So he did this like little post-apocalyptic film. You know, I say little because it's shorter. It's not feature length. But then, you know, we did this project with him. We put that out, and then we've got all his music videos and all this extra stuff and these trailers and short films, all this crazy stuff into this DVD package called Dragon City, Punk Rock in China. And we wanted to bring him on, lucky enough to get him to coordinate with us from China to bring him on and talk about it because it's a project that was a little under the radar for Wild Eye because it's not in our usual horror realm, so people don't, you know, jump on it and say, oh, we got horror. Mm-hmm. So Todd, bring him in.
Daryl Pestilence, is he related to Todd Pestilence?
I think he's related to Todd Sheets. Maybe not. Huh. Todd, are you related to Daryl?
I don't think so.
They're both directors.
I went to school with a Judy Pestilence.
Really?
But that's probably a common name.
I am at this moment trying to add him to our group call. It's,
bring him in.
If you're playing along at home.
I'm working on it.
Could be the Chinese censors.
Oh.
He's online. I'm seeing him.
I see him too, yeah. It's just, you know how this thing is, this wonderful Skype. It's a monster, but it's work. I hope it works. Give me a minute.
It seems to work for, you know, 40 million other people that have blogs and radio shows.
I wish it did. I wish it did.
Hopefully we'll get it.
The other night it was really bad. It was I was trying to work with one of our sponsors and trying to talk about getting you guys him on your show. So,
oh, a sponsor
kept hanging up on.
I love it.
Lovely.
Who was it?
It was our friend Doug Bradley.
Oh man, we got to get Doug on. We got to talk about Scream Park.
We'd love to. We'd love to.
But first, we got to get Daryl on.
Daryl's here.
Hey. Awesome.
Hi guys. Can Daryl. You hear me all right?
Yeah, man, crystal clear.
Great. I'm a little worried because you have a badge of honor now, Todd. JackalopeRadio.com is now blocked in the main in the PRC.
Really?
Yeah. I have a few people that were like sending me messages through my cell phone, like, we can't get on. We can't get on. But the good news is, if people have a VPN. You can listen to, it's weird. It could be a server thing. Think the way things work out in the mainland, it's, you know, with the great firewall, as we call it, it's questionable, but it could be a server thing or something, but your streams are not blocked. So if people can somehow access your streams, they can still listen, but they just can't access the Jackalope Radio.
They could listen through TuneIn, can't they? Or is that blocked too?
They might be able to do that because, like, before you brought me on, I was listening through the stream without my VPN.
Right.
It's just clicking on those links. There might be alternate ways through there. But congratulations, you join Facebook and YouTube and all those wonderful things and being blocked by a very group of paranoid people, a small handful of people.
I'm stoked.
That's just it's madness to me, Daryl, and welcome to the Movies Hate You show.
Thanks,
Mr. Lee is here with us.
Hey, Daryl.
Todd Sheets, of course, on the boards. Daryl Pestilence with us here to talk about his project Dragon City, to talk about the punk rock scene in China, and right now to talk about censorship in China, which is fascinating to me how much we take for granted here, where you can't even get onto a website. Yeah, what about like iTunes? Like, if you were to try to listen to this show in the archives, could your friends in China hear it there?
I don't use Apple products, so I can't really vouch for it. But my guess is with iTunes, it wouldn't be a problem. I'll have to double check. But the archive site, which I think was like on a URL with Nightwatch something 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 .com, that's how I was able to listen to your shows. That might not be blocked. It's weird. I'll have to check that out.
Okay. Wow.
Hmm. It's a badge of honor.
It is a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Can we say bad things about China now?
I wouldn't. I just wouldn't because, you know, he's embedded there. You see what I mean? So you start saying bad,
right.
You know, you might feel safe, but he's not very safe. Is
it? Gotcha.
It's not fair.
No.
It's weird. The censorship here is often arbitrary. Like Dragon City, we couldn't get distributed because we were rejected. I thought it would be the violence or the political content, but because of the English cursing in the film, it's a bilingual film. It's in Mandarin and English, but there's a lot of F-bombs dropped in it, and that's what they objected to. And I was worried about, you know, oh, they're going to ban us because of the violence or something, and that was not the case.
It's just fascinating. Do you think that they maybe use that as an excuse because of some of the political content?
You know, it's hard to tell because I'll give you an example. One of my friends, this great street punk band called Shochu Legion. I just attended one of their recent shows, literally behind. The Forbidden Palace, about 10 minutes walk from Tiananmen Square, and they're literally singing songs, you know, F the party and stuff in Chinese. So I think it depends on how powerful they think something is influenced, or like I said, sometimes they just block servers because maybe there's one thing. The sensitive topics here tend to relate to things related to Tibet and things that expose the financial dealings of higher-ranking party officials. And also in the western province of Xinjiang, which, you know, borders, I think it's Turkmenistan and all of that, because there's a lot of issues with those provinces that... You know, those things naturally get blocked. Anything related to Falun Gong is blocked.
Right.
So it's those things are specific. But now I have a friend, Wu Wei. He has a great punk band, and a lot of the punk bands that I've mentioned, you can find their stuff on YouTube. It's called SMZB, and they've been pretty critical of the government, and you know, to get your music or movies legally released here, you do have to get a your distributor has to get a publication stamp, and sometimes you have to go through a thing called the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television to get your films passed. And they had an album back in 2008 called 10 Years Rebellion, and they allowed for that to be distributed, but during the Olympics here in Beijing, they conveniently forced all of the record stores to pull the CDs off the shelves until the end of the Olympics because they didn't want any visitors to be privy to that. Go figure.
Amazing.
So it's a toss-up. Some things here are very progressive, and then some things aren't. something that might interest you guys and Todd. When I around 2008, they had this edict that horror films were banned. You know, of course, there's a thriving pirate DVD underground here, so that didn't really affect it. But every time in any city, when some guys from Beijing come down to town, some of the party boys, DVD shops will shutter and stuff until those guys are out of town. But like related to horror films, you know, they passed that ban. But then if you watch the official government channels here, CCTV, they're called, China Central Television, they were showing, you know, horror films during that time. So it's really nebulous how it works, and sometimes just too unpredictable.
Well, I'd heard that the guy in charge now, the pain in the ass that's in charge over there, I'd heard that he decided
watch
horror films scare the hell out of him, so they decided not to play him anymore, or even like filmmakers in China weren't allowed to make horror films because they scared him. And if they made the action movies, he wasn't a big fan of action movies because like some martial arts guy beat him up as a kid. So he said, if you make martial arts movies, they have to have a political context or a political subtext of some kind, or they won't even let them make the martial arts movies anymore without some kind of a propaganda message in there.
Yeah, I'm not entirely familiar with those stories, but when they did that ban in 2008, the whole they literally said from the horse's mouth, the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television, like, if it's not suitable for children, it's not suitable for everyone. It goes, over here, a much bandied about phrase under the previous leader, Hu Jintao, was harmonious society. And, you know, when we think of harmony, it tends to be this nice word, right? This utopic kind of phrase. But here it takes on an ominous kind of tone. And I think their mentality is if you can't show it to children, it's not suitable for the general population, which is kind of a backhanded insult, I think, for locals, but people sure still get to see these films, and there is a thriving underground.
Which is great, and will always crop up no matter where you try this kind of.
What about pornography? Is pornography freely distributed in China or via the internet or?
Again, it's one of those things. Officially, no. And if you are caught distributing it, you can be punished. Like, there were stories. There was a guy on a train who unwisely decided to watch some skin flick on his cell phone. And there was a rat on the train that turned him in. And he was fined substantially. But, you know, you don't hear a lot about the porn raids. They do publicly condemn it. But there are sites that are not blocked that I think they understand with a population, especially people 30 years old and younger, the whole imbalance, the gender imbalance, where at least 30 million men between the ages of, I think, 15 to 30 will never have a wife because there just physically are not enough women, born. I think there it might be one of those. Well, I'll give you an example. Prostitution is technically illegal, but it's not very well hidden here. Mm-hmm. So there's a Chinese phrase, chicken and duck talk. And maybe that applies where publicly condemned, but I guess sometimes you got to realize some of this stuff has to exist if you want to pacify people.
Right. It's sort of don't ask. Don't ask, don't tell kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. But Japanese AV is definitely popular here, and it's usually through the internet, and it's usually through pirated stuff. In Taiwan, a similar thing kind of exists. Pornography isn't technically illegal, but a lot of AV from Japan, adult video from Japan, is readily, easily purchased, usually pirate DVDs. But who knows? With the Taiwanese triads, probably have something worked out with the Borokudan in Japan. You know, the yakuza there. So who knows? But I think a lot of their stuff comes from there because there's like a lot of traditional Chinese subtitles and the stuff that gets distributed. The only thing I'm aware of, just observing this, is like there's one particular company. I think they're called AV Hot. from Japan. They're really huge here for some reason. And a few Japanese porn starlets like Sailor Ai have a huge, huge following, even on the domestic social media. Since Facebook and Twitter are blocked, there's local alternatives that thrive, like Weibo and Weixin and Renren, and some of the celebrities are on there, believe it or not. So, and they do give them visas to come and do photo shoots, not necessarily hardcore, but there are nude photo shoots that they do.
Do you see it as just a matter of time before all this stuff does go away as, you know, as China grows and becomes more of a international player and less, you know, kind of self-contained? I mean, just, you know, the Western influence.
The current leadership under Xi Jinping, they're not stupid people. And I think there's a kind of realization for the party to continue to exist. It has to adapt with the times. Their control in China, it's interesting because in America, certainly before I came to the mainland, we have this idea that the central government here in Beijing have this amazingly tight control over things. And while they do have a tight control, provinces sometimes are run like fiefdoms by the local party officials. And I think there's a general consensus that there's stuff that they'll turn their head I'm stumbling over my words here. There's stuff they'll turn their head on, but then there's certain stuff where it's like, okay, we got to clamp down here. And right. I think there might be that kind of unspoken agreement. As long as you do what we need, we'll give you a little elbow room for whatever you do.
Not too dissimilar from states' rights versus, you know, the federal mandate, like something that's happening with marijuana here now, where, you know, marijuana is legal in a couple states, but federally it's still, you know, a crime, but no one's convicting anyone of going and buying a joint.
Right. Good analogy.
You talked about the piracy now. I know that's a huge thing in China. Can you just, like, walk down the street and buy, like, DVDs of current, like, American blockbuster kind of things? Is it that out in the open?
Back when I first came to the mainland in 2004, before I started living here, because I've been here about 7 years, there were more DVD shops and street vendors. But because of, you know, the internet and torrenting is big here, but not as big as some of the domestic trading sites. Like, there's a thing called Funshin and whatever. And Chinese, generally speaking, tend to have a more frugal nature. They're really good with their money, and when they can get something for free, they will. But 90% of the stuff, there are shops that still exist. Like in Beijing, if you go to Sanli Tun, which is an area that's kind of big with foreign eateries and bars. You can find DVD shops easily that carry pretty much anything mainstream that you're looking for and some surprisingly obscure stuff. But in spite of the fact that 90% of the foreign movies barely get released here officially, there's a lot of film-literate people here. And it all thrives through the underground. And this would be one of those weird counterpoints about the negative effects of piracy, because Hollywood certainly wouldn't have had the inroads, and no, people would not be familiar with the product if piracy did not exist here.
Right, which brings, you know, a story I had talked about months ago on this show was how, you know, America, you know, American, the studios in Hollywood were making this, you know, kind of solidifying this relationship with China. And we were sending stars over there, and we started, you know, things like the Iron Man 3 situation where, you know, I know there was backlash for it, but in the Chinese version, there's this whole scene with the doctor and his assistant who are fixing up Iron Man, but that's cut out of the American version. But, you know, that was looked at upon as pandering in hindsight. But that concept that, you know, we can do these co-productions that, that meet both, you know, I mean, Hollywood sees that there's so many viewers there. But, I mean, how much of China doesn't even have, you know, has access to films? I mean, it's not as much as, you know, say, oh, my God, you know, a billion people or whatever they say, oh, all that money. It's not true. A lot of that's rural where these people don't have access to, you know, these films anyway, or money for that matter.
Yeah, and people forget when, or conveniently ignore, in the case of the studios, that 80% of China's population is still rural and living in abject poverty.
Right.
Or an agrarian existence, excuse me. But, like, you know, the thing is, in spite of all the piracy, especially for the middle class and the nouveau riche, they still, like in America, they want to see things on the big screen, and they will. Even if they know they're censored, they want that experience. And an interesting thing I've noticed is there's a lot of IMAX theaters here in China compared to the number that we have in the States, and more and more are being built. And there's a weird connection there, because a lot of these shopping malls that have them are owned by a construction concern called Wanda, and they do some really swell shopping malls. But I think they just invested or purchased some American cinema chain in the States. I don't remember if it was Regal or something. It's something that flashed across my radar a year ago. But, I mean, they're even getting involved in stuff in the States. And so far, the only serious negative stuff I've heard with the cross-cultural connection was related to that ill-advised Red Dawn remake, mm-hmm. where so they could make it into the Chinese market, they changed the enemy from being Chinese to North Korean.
Yep.
I mean, they spent millions of dollars.
Yeah, that was a major backfire here, and they shelved the movie for months. It didn't come out when it was projected, and I think it subsequently tanked, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
why mess with the original, first of all?
Right. But, you know, the odd thing is, you know, and there is still a cognitive disconnect with the Hollywood types and the viewing audience here in China. Most Chinese people would probably have gotten a kick out of China coming in and invading America. Yeah, sure, in the end, those American teenagers win or whatever, but just that concept alone, like 2012 was a film that did really well here, and that was one of the few films that actually, I don't think it was, you know, it's hard to tell with Roland Emmerich because he's such a terrible filmmaker, but I don't think he was going out of his way to kiss China's butt. But it was one of the few films where China was shown as a proactive member of the international community, because I'm going by memory here. But, like, I believe China builds the whole big arc that everybody goes on or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's three arcs. That's where it's all the big secret turns out to be in China. And isn't it that Tibetan saved the day? Like, isn't it like a Tibetan family or something?
Yeah.
And they sneak them into the complex, and there's this whole thing. So, yeah, very pro-Chinese. Yeah.
But not, I don't think it was in a pandering way. I mean, it could have been behind the scenes. I have no idea, but it didn't come off.
Not politically at all, no. But I think it was, you know, it was probably maybe because the ships were in China, that the people who helped them sneak in there had to be Chinese. Well, who else would live there? A farmer that was Chinese. So it could have just strict convenience.
It's almost like a product placement kind of thing.
But but it would make sense that those ships would be built. They had to be built fast, efficient, mm-hmm. and that's where it would be done. It wouldn't be done here. We have nowhere to build them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no shortage of human labor here.
Right. Now, quickly I'll say, because I want to bring around to Dragon City and talk about Dragon City before we get cut off by Todd here in about 13 minutes. We had a film a few months ago, our film Mold, which is an excellent gory horror film, but it's not, there's no nudity in it, there's no sex, it's very kind of, you know, old school retro 80s to a certain extent, but it's aware of that. So, you know, it's very well acted, but there's a lot of like green globby goo in it. There's no blood. There's, you know, there's heads exploding and stuff, but it's all kind of like street trash, kind of almost surrealistic comic booky kind of violence. Anyway, we secured a VOD deal for that film in China, and I was shocked. I was like, really? China wants that? How does that work? Now, I don't know whatever happened to it. They did pay us money. They paid cash up front for the VOD rights for a certain amount of years. They didn't want DVD. So I'm assuming that somewhere on some streaming site, there's this small B-movie from America playing, probably with countless others that the people have purchased for distribution there. So I was like, oh, that's cool. I that was the last market I thought would ever buy, you know, something from us. So my thing is, you're deeply involved in the punk scene, and, you know, when I was younger, involved in, you know, the metal, thrash, punk scenes, there was always a connection with B-movies. We always traded tapes. We always made video mixtapes of all the gore scenes from movies. We always bought the bootlegs at the convention. So do you find that in the punk scene there, that people are into B-movies? Now, I know what Hollywood's doing in China, but what's, you know, are people watching old Roger Corman films? Are they watching films like we put out, little, you know, films that are, you know, made for $5,000, $10,000? Or is everybody just kind of into Hollywood stuff?
Unfortunately, a majority is still Hollywood-centric. Because
from, well, it's here, it doesn't surprise me. It's worldwide, yeah.
The added dimension here is it's exotic because it's foreign and it's truly escapist for them, whereas back home, certain films tend to, people like The Fast and the Furious, we have that whole culture of this, the street speed demons and the cars and stuff. That here it's much less, so there's that whole other element, you know, that this is distinctly a different thing and it's exotic and it takes me away from my work, you know, 6-day work week of toiling away in an office or something.
Right.
But there is a thriving cult film community. You'd be amazed what you can find here. I mean, a few weeks ago I was discussing Cannibal Holocaust with people who had seen it, and John Waters films are big here. And what you have, and, you know, a lot of the times, bilingual fans, mainlanders who will get these films from overseas or maybe from a torrent site, and they'll do fan subs, and they generally do a decent job. Like they did a tremendous job with the fan subs for Attack the Block, the British film.
Uh-huh.
The fans that did it even nailed some of the British colloquialisms with the equivalents in Mandarin Chinese, and they really caught the essence of that film. So I think a lot of, especially the niche and cult stuff, it's mostly driven by fans more than the underground market, and so a lot of that stuff when you end up buying the DVD was just, they downloaded the fan sub version in a high definition format and then mastered their own DVD from it.
Right. Okay.
But like, that film Martyrs from France, when that came out, they just pirated the French DVD and did a subs based on the English or French subs that were on the initial DVD. And so there's some edgy stuff that gets here. And with the punks, they're open-minded about stuff, especially when I was making Dragon City. They're up for making cult movies, and they get it. The kids are very well aware here. And, we talk about how much content from the internet gets blocked, but there's a lot of stuff that doesn't. So they read up. And right now I'm seeing among 20-somethings this big interest in going back to the early 90s and late 80s of Hong Kong cinema, especially the cult films produced there during that time.
And that's the stuff, the Category 3 stuff. And I mean, that's the stuff we, you know, in the early 90s, I was going into Chinatown in New York and sitting in those theaters, and these things, you know, they were the Mandarin and Cantonese, and I couldn't understand them, but I was watching Stephen Chow or John Woo movies that were coming out fresh. there.
Yeah, the old Sun Xing and Rosemary and Music Palace theaters.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All three of them. Yeah. That was a great, really great time. Watching like Once Upon a Time in China, you know, part two or whatever, just sitting there for, and they were all double features, and it was so cool. I miss those times.
And the bootlegs too. I mean, tapes were coming out
everywhere.
10 a day.
Everywhere.
I couldn't keep up with them.
And then I went and joined in Chinatown, I joined a video store, and I would just, they had these, everything, they had stuff on shelves, but it was like, weirdly enough, it was American stuff. But then you asked for these books, and they had all these books, and the books just had the covers for the tapes in sleeves. And you would just go through these books, and I would just pick. There was one I got called Porky's Meatballs. It was like a teen comedy from Hong Kong. I'm like, I'll take that. Anything called Porky's Meatballs.
With the John Sham Kin Fun. I remember that. I think I saw that at the Music Palace. Well over 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago or so, yeah.
Well, I would rent like four of these things. I think that was my limit. Take them home over the weekend, dub them all, bring them back, get four more, dub them all, and then trade with people. You know,
half of them were already dubs as they were, you know?
Yeah.
And they were all boots, you know? There was very, very few of them who had the original, you know, kind of stickers on them from the company. What was it?
Golden Harvest?
No, Say Ten. Was that the?
Tai Seng.
Tai Seng. And most of them were Tai Seng. But, you know, stuff like, you know, Wheels on Meals and all that stuff. The obscure stuff. I wanted to find those little gems, you know, that... What's the one where they have the chainsaw fight at the end? I was so...
Tiger on Beat.
Tiger in Heat. And there was a sequel as well.
But Tiger on Beat.
Tiger on Beat. That when I rented that and I watched that, I just changed everything for me. I was like, this is amazing. How come this is not being done here?
Mm-hmm.
It just changed everything. The second one wasn't...
There's a weird connection to your home base. The star of Tiger and Beat, Conan Lee, is from Brooklyn. His name's Lloyd Hutchinson, actually.
Really?
So you had the Brooklyn boy battling the master killer, Gordon Liu.
Yeah, exactly.
With chainsaws.
Oh, man. It's just that scene. I put that scene on so many tapes for people. You know, like I said, we would just trade, like, you know, tapes with, like, you know, the gore scenes from Day of the Dead or something, and then I'd always throw that on there. Always. I just wanted to turn people on to that.
I think it's A Better Tomorrow 2, maybe, where it takes place in New York somewhat. Is that right?
Yeah, Brooklyn's Chinatown, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I watched this, and then maybe a couple years later, I was living in Hoboken, and then I watched it again, and I realized that this big shootout scene takes place. Remember the Hotel Victor? You know where that is?
Yeah.
Just off of where the PATH train is. It was right there. And you can see the Hotel Victor sign in it. He's like pointing out the window, shooting. It's like, oh my God, this is Hoboken, New Jersey. They shot this.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a great ending, too.
Yeah.
Better Tomorrow, movie. Too. Oh, man. Fantastic ending.
It always takes a half an hour to convince the lady at the rental shop that, yes, you knew that these were Chinese movies.
I left out is that it took me at least two visits to get them to take me in.
Right, right.
Because they didn't understand what I want. Yeah.
No, you don't want this.
And they would point me to the wall where they actually had like old big boxes, like, you know, Paul Naschy movies and stuff. And they, you know, all this stuff, nothing to do, no Chinese subs, just English. It must've been a regular video store. And then they just, you know, had this stock there. I don't know where it came from. And they would always say, no, you, these are for you. These are for you. And I'm like, no, I want these movies. And I had to pay them. I think I paid them like a $150 deposit or something. Because they just didn't trust me. They didn't know where I was coming from.
Right. They might have thought it was a raid or something.
Yeah, they might have thought I was working for the FBI or something.
I remember going to a shop and wanting to rent In the Line of Duty 4, and they were playing it on the TV, and it was very visible, you know, because they were taking the prints from the theatrical prints, so they had the Chinese and English subtitles on it, and they're like, there's no English subtitles, and I'm pointing to the TV saying, yes, there is, you know, trying to convince me why I didn't want to rent it. And that's why I started picking up Cantonese. Because as soon as I was dropping Cantonese, they kind of laid off with the latent racism and stuff in Chinatown.
Well, some of them were great. They, you know, they're in Mandarin, the Cantonese subs, the English subs, and then there was sometimes another set of subs there. I don't know what that was, But it, sometimes it, like, you know, a third of the screen was taken up by those subs, and of course the English on the bottom were always cut off because they didn't properly transfer it from the 35. So it was always like you caught some of it.
Right.
But yeah, look, I was watching stuff for the action most of the time. Or the,
that was a game.
Or, yeah.
I still have a headache from watching Heroes Shed No Tears, you know.
Oh, God, what a great movie. What a great movie. Todd, can we kick over a little bit?
I could give you about 5 minutes. Not too much, I know.
We're at the two-minute mark, Todd. Is that correct?
Huh?
We're at the two-minute mark?
We are at the two-minute mark.
So I wanted to, well, first of all, you're listening to the Movies Hate You show. We have a very special guest direct from China, director Daryl Pestilence. We were talking about everything going on in China with movies, music. We're talking about, you know, our influences here from China when we were coming up and getting into films in the late 80s and early 90s. And I want to talk about Dragon City, which is Daryl's project, which, you know, encompasses some of that horror element and but also incorporates the punk, you know, the pretty huge punk rock scene that goes on in China. Probably maybe even bigger than what's going on here in the U.S. Now, when I introduced the whole thing, Daryl, I said this was a Wild Eye side project, and that's the connection here. But for anyone listening live, we're going to be cut off in about 40 seconds. So go to the archives to hear the rest of this. We're going to talk more about Dragon City.
Not yet. Not immediately. Next week, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Probably by Saturday, right, Todd? Or by Monday, the latest.
Yeah.
You'll hear this. The March 25th, 2014 archive to hear the rest of this. And we definitely got to have Daryl back, man, because we're talking. I'm like, you know, we've been on 40 minutes.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, it's gone. It just flew by. Well, we're going to sign off. Movies Hate You. Mr. Ree, Todd, thank you. Stay on, Daryl. Daryl Pestilence.
Thank you.
Dragon City.
Thank you, Todd.
Get that on Amazon. Get that. Just Google it. Dragon City. Punk rock in China. And we're going to keep going. Good night. Keep going for the archives. Boom. Sign us off, Todd. We're signed off. Okay, here we go. Daryl, the thing I loved about Dragon City when I first saw it was that, you know, I saw the spaghetti Western influence. I saw the, you know, 90s, you know, Hong Kong influence there. And I also saw the punk rock, of course, right in front. You know, that's what it's about, and the music. But these are all things that are close to my heart. So I instantly connected with it. But can you give me, you know, the elevator pitch on Dragon City for someone who, you know, just coming in out of the blue, and they're like, I didn't even know they had punk rock in China. Just kind of describe it for us, and then we'll talk from there.
Okay. It's weird, but I'm going to go back to the 90s when I first came to Asia. And I was sitting in my apartment. We had satellite television, and we were watching Channel V, which is kind of like the equivalent of MTV in Asia. And I saw this music video at the time. I didn't know who it was, but it was clearly punk, and it had a heavy Ramones sound to it. And I would later learn it was this band called the New Pants. They no longer play punk, but back in the day they were a really solid punk band. And the song was called Hey Ni, Hey You. And I was like, you know, holy shit, there's a punk rock scene in the mainland. I knew it wasn't Taiwan because of the simplified Chinese characters that I saw in the video. But I was like, I was kind of unaware. I knew there was metal going on by way of bands like Tang Dynasty and Hey Bao, Black Panther getting distribution through Hong Kong and Taiwanese record labels. But that opened my eyes, and it put it on the radar. And that was maybe around 98, 99. And then when I finally moved to the mainland almost seven years ago, I was very aware of the mainland punk scene. There wasn't a hell of a lot of information online in English, but it was starting to develop. The punk scene in China goes all the way back to around 95. there were, you know, that's when Wu Wei and started, he had left the MIDI music school here in Beijing and went back initially to Hunan province in a city of Changsha, and then back to his hometown of Wuhan in Hubei province. And he started up SMZB, Shenmin Zibing, which means the bread of life. And there was another band called Pangu, also known as Punk God. And those are one of the few bands that have been exiled from the mainland. They went to Taiwan, I think, in 2006, 2007, or 2008. And they played a pro-independence rally. And they ended up having to stay in Thailand until they could get asylum in Europe. And I think they still make music. Musically, they're not that impressive, but lyrically, they're brutal and seriously anti-party. But anyway, you know, I came and immediately just started to devour anything I could related to mainland independent music, punk in particular. And around 2008, before the Olympics, I moved northwest to the city of Xi'an in Shanxi province. If you ever see the movie Jet Li, Zhang Yimou's hero, that deals with the first emperor. So Xi'an used to be known as Chang'an, and it was a big, big place. And in the west, it's kind of the center. In the west of China, it's the center of culture, and it's where Eastern and Western culture, in terms of Chinese geography, meet. Excuse me. And basically, while I was there, I moved there specifically because it was a cool city and that it had a pretty heavy punk scene for a while. And while there, I was getting tattoo work done, and I made friends with this artist named Li Chenming, Da Ming, we call him. And he knew I had attended film school, and I'm an old school punk. I'm a middle aged man now, and he introduced me to this band that played ska punk. They were called Sucker. They're still around, and they're still great, and I'm still working with them. That's when I started to get back into filmmaking again, and that's when I started to get into the music video side of things. I work mostly with metal, and 90% of what I do is with punk bands. And basically from there, I made three videos back to back with them for their album There's a Sucker Born Every Minute. And after that, I left Xi'an, and I made a mistake of moving to the gangster-ridden northeast in a place called Changchun in Jilin province, and I was not very happy there. It was culturally dead. And I escaped there and moved to a city in Hubei province. Beijing is in the center of Hubei, but it's its own municipality. But it was while there I got contact from a guy named Yao Rei. Yao Rei formed one of the first punk bands in Western China in around 2000-2001. He had a grunge band going on called Evil Heart, and his interest started to veer more towards punk, and he formed this band, and jokingly they didn't really have a name, so they just stuck with calling themselves No Name Band, Wu Ming Yu Dui. And he contacted me, and he had brought the Sham 69 to China, and No Name were preparing this new album at the time, which is called That Is What We Believe. And he wanted to make some music videos. And my friend Zhang Hui, who a lot of the guys in Sucker were at one time or another involved with No Name. My friend Zhang Hui had gone back to No Name and suggested that Rei connect with me to make some music videos. And we started with doing a video for a song called Smash Everything, which people can find on YouTube. If you spell No Name as one word, N-O-N-A-M-E, or you look for the name Shanzhai Lawai, S-H-A-N-Z-H-A-I second word, Laowai, Laowai. You can find my YouTube page where some of these music videos are, and a lot of the concerts that I'm recruited to shoot are there, with a plethora of Chinese punk bands and metal bands and noise bands. But basically, we did that video, and he was like, "Do you want to do some more for this new album?" And we agreed that like 4 music videos would be cool. And I started to do these promos, these video promos for the album. And I decided to move back to Xi'an to earn my money. I teach, like right now I'm teaching Western culture at a university. And basically, I got a job in Xi'an. Oddly enough, the university I ended up working for when I went back to Xi'an was financed by Sir Run Run Shaw from nice. Shaw Brothers fame, who recently died. But you know, they were just financing it. They didn't run it. It was a terrible school, but I respect the Shaw family and Sir Run Run Shaw's long history of charity work. And he's uh-huh. the Shaw family. A lot of universities here, public schools, have been benefactors of the Shaw family fortune. So when people, you know, want to think about it, you know, Master Killer and all those films helped to benefit society in a way that I'm sure most people wouldn't imagine.
Well, they benefited us in, you know, in a different way here, creatively and culturally, and they yeah. also financially benefited, which is an awesome thing to hear.
And while there in Xi'an, we decided, you know, this will sound strange, especially for a punk thing, but do you remember Styx did this short film called Kilroy was here for their yes. album with Mr. Roboto?
Oh,
Mr.
Roboto, sure. Oh yeah, definitely. It's legendary.
I just perked up
yeah.
when I heard that.
And it was a cool concept and a mediocre album, but it was a cool concept. And I thought, you know, hey, man, we're going to do these 4 music videos. It'd be pretty easy if we just, you know, do these little short bits in between and connect them together like a little mini movie. And Ray was really receptive to that. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Italian Filoni, the commercial cinema from the late 50s till the very early 90s. And I'm also kind of obsessed with the post-apocalyptic films. I think it started with Mad Max when I saw that on the drive-in theater and at the time it was like WNYW, Metro Media, back in New York. I saw it late one night and they ran it. Surprisingly uncut, like you could see the nudity, people's backsides and everything. The guy's willy, even. I remember that vividly. I'm like, holy shit, Channel 5, they're showing fucking nudity. But I'm a big fan of those post-apocalyptic films, especially the Italian Mad Max cash-ins, the Enzo uh-huh. Castellari stuff. So sure. I was like, and there was a film from Japan that kind of influenced me, Bakuretsu Toshi, I think the English name is Burst City, Shogo Ishii, that was punks in a post-apocalyptic setting. And I was like, I kicked off this idea to Ray, and he was really cool about it. And in a matter of a few weeks, we pounded out the script for Dragon City, and he took a look at it, and he, you know, Ray's a kind of connected guy, so it was translated within a matter of, I think, 48 hours, and everybody was on board to do it, and that's kind of how Dragon City came about. And from there, you know, I didn't even have the cameras or the equipment. I was just shooting on what they call standard definition equipment. I was just shooting shows and the music videos I was doing. And he got cinematographers, this guy Gao Chenghui and Yang Irfan. And those two guys were tremendous help. And even one of No Name's old drummers, like No Name is like this huge family of ex-members. And one of the former drummers, Ju Chen, pitched in and did cinematography. And we shot it in HD with Canon 5D Mark IIs for a budget of, when all is said and done, like $300 US. Well, totally self-financed.
Did you find that, you know, being from the, being a punk rocker from New York, from America, does that instantly give you credibility, or did you have to earn it with everyone there because there might be different, there's not the same punk standard there as here, and I'm guessing at that, but I'm saying, was there a vetting process for you with these guys, or is it just like, hey, oh my God, there's this American, we got to get this American guy, this American punk rocker?
That's a good question. I think the best way to put it is, when you're a foreigner and you have interest in Chinese music, especially when it came to punk, there's that curiosity thing. And then when they talk to you and they see that, wow, you're old school and you know your stuff and you really have an open mind, it's easy to make friends.
Right.
But in terms of the music video stuff, Da Ming knew I was doing stuff, and he talked to his friends, and we sat down, at the time, Sucker, we sat down, and I told them my ideas, and they took a chance on me based on Da Ming's recommendation and their own personal comfort level with me, because I didn't know them at the time as well. Now they're great friends. I love them dearly. They're like family. They're my extended Chinese family. And, but at the time, it was basically they took a risk, and they enjoyed it turned out they enjoyed the experience, and the friendships just formed from there. That led to No Name, because Zhang Hui is like my little little punk brother, and he's a serious cat. He has sacrificed a lot in China. When you play rock and roll, for a lot of the young bands, there's a limited lifespan on because parental pressure, familial piety is, the Confucian familial piety thing is still very strong here. And he was attending at one time Xi'an Foreign Languages University, so he's fairly fluent in English. And he gave up his academic career, which could be the kiss of death for a lot of people here, to pursue rock and roll. And
there's a lot more culturally at stake when someone decides to get into the arts in that way. It's not like here, where you can be in your 40s and still trying to make it, or still trying to be a writer, or still trying to be a musician. And there's plenty of people out there doing that, but there's a different cultural stigma that comes with that in other countries, including China.
Yes, and that is changing, but change in China is slow. And
yeah.
Zhang Hui is so dedicated to what he does. The poor guy, at the time I met him, he had a fiance, and she eventually laid the gauntlet on him, rock and roll or me. And Zhang Hui is still playing rock and roll.
If we had a dollar for every girl that gave a guy that ultimatum.
Right.
Anywhere in the
world. But he ended up meeting Ms. Wright later on, and there was a great punk rock wedding back in Xi'an last April. Just a drunken mess, but a wonderful, beautiful thing. And through Zhang Hui, I ended up when he took his sabbatical from Sucker and went back to No Name, he put the word in to Ray about me. And after that, things just continue to take off. I've done 13 music videos with Sucker. No Name right now are kind of in a weird hiatus thing going on. But like Sucker continue to perform, and we've done 13 music videos, and I'm about to complete a short film that we shot back in the summer, in July, up in Xi'an, called Rock and Roll. And I'm going to put that on YouTube because, there's no money in rock and roll in China. It's a hard sell. If people want to wait a couple of weeks or a month or two, that should be online. But we made the short film called Rock and Roll. And now I'm preparing to do a couple of music videos for a really great Beijing guitar wolf kind of Jet Boy style noise punk band called the Dieters. And I've got two documentaries I'm working on. One that I've been working on since 2010. It's an oral history of the punk in China from 1995 to 2002. And the other documentary is about contemporary punk in China. Specifically, you know, Beijing is kind of the epicenter for culture in China, and especially with all forms of rock and roll. And there's a lot of great bands in the interior that get overlooked, even in China, because there's this kind of view that, you know, I guess you can compare it to America with, like, you know, you had Motown with the soul, and you had in the 90s Seattle with the grunge. It was almost like if you were a band from Seattle, you would get, you know, and you had some kind of following, you'd get signed. Beijing is still viewed as the golden egg, but there are so many great bands that stay local. SMZB would be one of them, and they're cool in the sense of they play when they want to play, and they can mostly just play music, the big music festivals, if they want to. And Wu Wei single-handedly built the punk rock scene in Hubei and Wuhan, starting with his band SMZB. And there's a lot of great bands in the interior. So the other documentary is kind of focusing, there'll be Beijing bands, but there'll also be, I think it'll be the first documentary on Chinese punk where you really get a look at the life of punks on the interior.
That's fascinating. I love that. What is the feeling of the band having the film released in North America? Is there an excitement there, or fear, or what is their feeling?
Ray's a pretty open-minded guy, and he's always been positive about getting his stuff out there beyond China. No Name are one of the few of the smaller punk bands to be able to tour, and they mostly tour Europe. In fact, they didn't even have a record distributor on the mainland, but they had one in Germany, and by virtue of them having one in Germany, they ended up getting a deal with one of the two big major independent record labels here, Modern Sky, for their album Sick and Tired, just based on the fact that they were signed to a German label.
That's very cool.
Ray's real proactive about that, and in that sense, he's still got the old school punk spirit where, number one, you're doing this because you love what you do. Number two, you want more people to hear you. You're not doing it to just, you know, scream at a wall. You're hoping to reach other people and make new connections and friends and get out there, and they're all really excited about it, especially since we couldn't distribute the thing in China.
Well, that's the thing. I love being involved in the project, because being able to give something distribution that was banned somewhere else is a great achievement. To be able to you know, present it in the form that it was intended, and not have, you know, any type of censorship, except the kind of apathy of the public, you know, embracing it. That's really what we fight here is kind of the ocean of content that's out there, you know. So you're fighting against millions of videos that are free and millions of songs that are free out there, and you're putting something out there saying, hey, this is interesting, and you don't have $2 million to promote it. So, you know, that's what you're fighting against, you know, and that's, you know, just as it's almost, you know, like a silent censorship in a way. You know, you're kind of censored by your own obscurity than by some government. You know, that actually might feel better to be censored by a government, because that almost gives you a blessing of some sort that it's valid to some demographic of people. But to just have, you know, try to get something to, you know, swim out there in this, you know, over glutted market here, at least. It's tough. It's really tough. And I think, you know, frankly, having a few months under my belt with this project. I think there's a – I didn't think so, but I can't verify it. But I think there's a little bit of a negative kind of feeling toward China, you know, with some Americans. I think there's a – you know, there's still kind of a they're not really – you know, human rights friendly, or, you know, the Falun Gong thing, or it's Tibet thing. I think there's still kind of like there's an uneasiness about China as a whole, as a government here, even though there are, you know, attempts being made, and we've clearly been in bed with China for years politically. But I think culturally, there's still kind of not a full embracing, and you could even see like how long it takes for Chinese American actors to get a second, you know, a banana lead, you know, lead on a TV show or something. It's taken years and years, a lot longer than it seems, than for other demographic groups. So I don't know if there's any kind of, I wouldn't call it a racism, because I don't think it's a racism against a race of people, but it's almost like a political kind of prejudice of some sort, where it's like, we're not really sure, is China going to kill us? Like, they own all, you know, they have all our debt. Are they going to invade us? You know, like, case in point, this Hollywood film Red Dawn, where they make, you know, the Chinese the enemy, you know, until it bit them in the ass. But that came from somewhere, someone thinking, yeah, China's a threat, you know, like, people will take that seriously if we put that in a movie. Well, it must be in the consciousness somewhere. So I think that trickles down into a project like this, where we're like, hey, this is this cool thing happening that you probably didn't know was happening. And it's kind of like, are is the public ready to embrace it and take it? We're gonna all agree to have Daryl back soon, in a little while, maybe as we get closer to the early summer, and we're gonna talk about Dragon City more, because we just sent out, you know, 80 copies of this thing. All these press outlets, and we're letting people know about this project. And we want.
Can I take a moment to thank you and 42nd Street Pete and Ken Keish for, you know, when we made Dragon City, we distribution in the States wasn't even on the radar. It just kind of worked out. It was like a happy accident. But if it wasn't for 42nd Street Pete and Ken Keish and yourself believing in the project, it would probably remain infinitely more obscure than it is now. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, believe me, it's my honor to be able to get behind, you know, a project. This is part, you know, look, even if, you know, if 200 people see it here in the States, that's 200 more, and you don't know one of those people is the next person like one of us who was sitting at the Rosemary in Chinatown, who will carry your message for the next 10, 15 years. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I look at it. Is like, at the very least, we did get it out there. You know, put it out professionally. It can compete against other stuff that's out there. You know, we've done what we can with it, and you know, that feels good. That in itself is an accomplishment. But of course, we want it to do good. We want it to make a couple dollars and be able to pay for itself and to maybe finance the next project. So, you know, that's always a part of it. So, you know, we can't deny that. But, you know, it's been an honor to work on the project, and it's been a long time coming. It's a lot of work. We even had trouble getting files from you because of the laws in China and things. So, you know, it was a battle for us on this end too, to a certain degree. You know, putting it all together, and now battling with, you know, the press and saying, come on, you know, you got to look at this thing. Here's another copy. Hey, you got to talk about this thing, you know, blah, blah. So I like being able to fight for it on this end, and it's still a work in progress. So I'm glad to have worked on it.
We're all grateful for it.
Thank you. Hopefully, anybody
who gives the movie a chance, I hope they keep an open mind about Chinese punk and scour YouTube. There's a lot of great stuff out there. There's so many great bands here.
Seriously, and at the very least, out of curiosity, you should want to know, what does punk rock in China sound like? You know, how are they emulating, imitating, and taking it to the next level in their own way? The punk that we, you know, hear and are accustomed to. Like, what is their take on it? What are they adding to it? And that's, you know, that should, at the very least, for music fans, I would think that would be. That's how I looked at it. I'm like, I can't imagine anyone who's into punk here not at least curious to know, what the hell does this sound like? Is it something I'm going to like? Is it, you know, is it going to blow my mind? What is it? So, you know, Dragon City, The subhead, punk rock in China. So if you go to Amazon, you go to any of your online retailers, you're going to find it there. We've got it up there. Google it. You know, also YouTube. There's trailers floating around. Daryl's got a lot of stuff out there floating around at Dragon City. And if you worst case, shoot us an email at wildeyereleasing.com. If you need to find it, if you want a screener, if you're a blogger or a reviewer, want to see it, definitely get in touch with us, and we will get you a copy to peruse. Daryl Pestilence, thank you again, sir. We're going to have you back. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Todd.
I know it's early over there, man, but we really appreciate you staying up or getting up early to do it, whichever the case might be. Mr. Reed, thank you very much, sir. Mr. Sheets, thanks for letting us stay over. You're in the archives of the Movies Hate You show, and we are signing out for the night.